the future.
There are no people.
There are no people in the future.
No people at all.
There are no people in the future.
Where did all my people go?
There are no people in the future.
Let me try my people call.
Welcome once again to another episode of Raging Chickens Out to Cube Live. Yes, it is our call-in show from Monday, January 11th, 2021. On Out to Cube Live, we talk to progressives, activists, and troublemakers of all sorts from our own backyards and, yep, all the way across the country. On Fridays, Sean Kitchen and I break down the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. And you can get all our shows by subscribing to our podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. And if you're out there making sure that you're giving us that five-star review, make sure that you're kind of sharing it with your friends, making sure you're giving that thumbs up, leave us that review, and that helps other people find our show. But you can only join the conversation live through the Podbean app on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern. This show also streams on our YouTube channel. Hey, everybody out there on our YouTube channel. If we're getting some noise, somebody's got some noise in the background, dropping stuff or something. Sorry, just check that. So make sure you get over on our YouTube channel. If you are listening to our YouTube channel right now, make sure you're subscribing. Make sure you're smashing that bell to make sure that you get an alert every time that we go live. You can help support this show by becoming a patron for as little as $5 a month at patreon.com/rcpress. If you're listening to this show live on the Podbean app right now, yep, you can show us some love by dropping a few bucks into our tip jar by clicking on that little gift icon at the bottom of your screen. Fill your digital pockets with Podbean's golden beans. That's what they call them. I didn't make it. And send us a gift of your choice. Every gift that you send helps support and expand this podcast. You can also, you know, you're not ready to become a member. You don't want to kind of have yourself full of golden beans. You just want to kind of show us some love anyways. For the one-timer, that's fine too as well. You can head over to paypal.me/rcpress and make a one-time contribution. And if you're looking for more PA progressive talk, you know, every night, just tune into the Rick Smith Show's live stream at 9 p.m. Eastern tonight, right? Or on his YouTube channel and his Twitter, his Facebook, and make sure you subscribe to his daily podcast wherever you get your podcasts. A special shout out to Jonathan Mann, who wrote our intro song, There Are No People in the Future. Check out all his great stuff on his YouTube page or follow him on Twitter at SongadayMan. That's SongadayMan with two N's. Last name is Mann. SongadayMan on Twitter. He's got some great stuff over there. He's just been rocking it, too, since the insanity of the of 2021. You know, I saw this somewhere on social media where they just basically said, you know, there's the comic of 2020 sitting there. I'm like, yeah, we did this. We had a pandemic and all this. You're never going to be able to top that. Then they have a picture of 2021. And they're like, hold my beer. And then here we go. That's where we're at. Oh, God. Oh, God. So, yes, here we are. Monday, January 18th. It is at MLK Day. It is 2 days away from the beginning of the next presidency, right, for the inauguration. It is less than a week from the attempted coup, and we're on the eve of the beginning of classes at Kutztown University. So, hey, I thought what a better night to have some folks, some student organizers from Kutztown University activists. We've got Paul Burlett, Matthew Mayer, and Samantha Marenchik. I should have asked you this beforehand.
Oh, you got it. Marenchik.
Marenchik. Okay, great, great, yeah. Great. Excellent. How about that? Very good. So Paul is a junior secondary English major. He gained grassroots organizing experience working with Kutztown Students for Sanders, and most recently with Healthy Campus Bill of Rights, a group of concerned professors, community members, parents, and students that aim to put pressure on KU's administration regarding the fall 2020 reopening plan. You've heard us talk about them on our shows. Paul believes in the power of direct action to be able to empower students and employees to demand dignity from decision makers and bosses that continue to put profits over people. And Sam is a sophomore music education major. She was excited to expand and solidify her political ideology on her arrival at Kutztown. Prior to attending Kutztown, Sam was the president of her high school's Gay Straight Alliance. At KU, she joined the Bernie Sanders campaign, where she began to learn the importance of grassroots organizing. She had always seen herself as a humanitarian, but her experiences and ability to lead helped propel KUA and the successful organization it is today. And Matthews, also a sophomore music education major at KU. Upon his arrival at KU in 2019, he didn't have any strong political affiliations. However, events over the past year opened his eyes to the truth of progressive and leftist policy. He believes in the power of the collective and uplifting the working class from the oppression of the ruling class. These beliefs serve as the driving forces behind Matthew's participation in KUA and desire to ensure safety to all students and employees at Kutztown. The Kutztown University Activists are a non-hierarchical group of students who formed in response to Kutztown University's negligent reopening this past fall. They are fighting to end worker abuse, a safe COVID-19 plan, better student health services, and true student empowerment. And KU activists seek to create a new culture at Kutztown that empowers the students to be able to make changes regarding their own educational experience and the society more broadly. Whoo! Welcome, welcome, welcome to you all. Thanks for coming on the show tonight.
Thank you
for having us.
So I was, when we first originally talked about this is back before, kind of at the end of the fall semester, we talked about having some of you all on to talk a little about the KU activists with the eye toward, the beginning of the semester and the organizing kind of gets kind of renewed. You know, it's kind of the nature of kind of like higher education organizing, right? Every semester that organizing gets renewed a bit. And little did we know at that point that we would have an attempted coup, right? We would have, a further raging of a pandemic. And then we have, even Kutztown University president, despite all his grit and fortitude, now also has come down with COVID-19, right? And still is insisting on kind of, back in the spring. So kind of the idea was just like, okay, let's kind of renew the new year, renew organizing. But it seems like we're not going to get too far away from the legacy of where we've been. So I don't know who'd like to kind of kick us off here. But, one of the things that I'd be curious to start us off, and I ask a lot of folks to come on the show, just way of beginning it is just kind of like, what got you to the point where you are now? Like, in other words, what's that kind of path and what's that story of becoming involved with activism and then kind of KU activism, activists in particular? Anybody want to go first on that?
Yeah, I'll go first. I think for me, the thing was, it was just from the very beginning. I mean, throughout the entire summer, we really didn't have a lot of information on, what was even going to happen in terms of reopening. I didn't know if I live at Golden Bear Village West, which houses 6 people. I didn't know if I was going to still be living there or if they were going to move us anywhere. And finally, I'm pretty sure it was like August, which was not great timing. Dr. Hawkinson, laid out the should I say plan? Is that, am I giving too much credit there? the plan to reopen. And from there, I was just really confused because I was like, there does not seem to be a good plan for testing. No plan really at all in terms of students living on campus. It didn't seem like anything was going to be different, even though the circumstances were dire. And for me, like, as I said, I live in a place with 6 other people. And even if you're all really responsible, something's bound to happen when you're in a jam-packed environment like a college campus during a pandemic when the response isn't even sufficient in itself. So I think that and just being and already having a good relationship with people like Paul and Sam and other students who, started this, started KU activists, led me to just being like, we need radical change. And also the fact that, I wasn't super involved with Healthy Campus Bill of Rights, but when I was, it made me realize just the negligence of the university and how they really, this current administration does not seem too excited at all to actually talk to people who need answers, concerned parents, employees, students. And from there, that was the turning point for me, just realizing that we need help and we're not getting it.
Right.
And we need answers, we're not getting it. And for me, I was just like, we need to do something. And a lot of people had the same exact thought.
Cool. Now, were you one of those students that got caught up in coming back to campus and then kind of finding out your schedule got all flipped around and there weren't kind of sufficient protections and then you had to decide whether or not to stay on campus or not?
To a certain extent, like for me, because I was worried about, just the entire plan in general, mm-hmm. I was wondering, should I go home? The thing for me is like, I guess I didn't try hard enough if I wanted to like try and reschedule everything. But even if I wanted to, like, I'm a music student. Mm-hmm. So it was really difficult for me to try and just reschedule my entire, you know, plan, because it's pretty meticulous how they want you to do everything, which is, you know, no one's expecting a pandemic to throw any curveballs in there. But so I can't, you know, for me, I was like, I would have preferred staying home to be safe, but at the same time, I kind of couldn't.
Right.
And that's the situation that I was in. Luckily, it turned out okay. I mean, I was responsible myself, but it certainly was not the most, it wasn't the greatest experience, and something that I definitely, it clearly could have been better, especially because Kutztown is doing a lot more now, even though their new reopening plan for the spring still isn't sufficient at all.
Yeah, so Sam, you're a music major too as well. Was your story similar to his, or what kind of got you to kind of where you're at today and your involvement in KUA?
Yeah, I definitely had a very similar experience to Matt, seeing as we're in most of the same classes together. Mm-hmm. So upon arriving to campus, and before then, I was still in this big conflict of if I should go or not, just seeing what would be best for me and myself, if to, you know, be close to classes practicing or to be stuck home and be Zooming. You know, there's a lot of just disconnection, trying to see friends, trying to not to. So that was a big conflict with that. But going way back to where this all started, I mean, growing up, I didn't have much political affiliation at all. I grew up thinking not to worry about politics. It's not something to get into, but just a very privileged way of thinking. I mean, once I got a bit older, you soon realize that it's just people you should be taking care of and yourself. You know, that's what life is all about. And that's going to come down to, like, it does come down to politics, you know, because right now in our life, that's what depicts what happens to people. It's not just like, you know, these written rules that don't matter. They do affect people's lives. So, you know, I think with me and, you know, always trying to look to take care of people, to lead people in some way, to make sure everyone's still safe and connected, you know, and feeling good, it definitely just all comes down to, you know, organizing and the direct action and activism, because that's where you're really taking care of people and making sure everyone's okay. You know, you can't just sit back and say, like, I hope it gets better. You know, if you have the privilege to fight for that, you should.
You know, I love hearing you talk about kind of caring for people as a frame too. And this is one of the things that we see emerging in a lot of activist circles, and even kind of revisioning of our economies at this point, especially in the wake of climate change and the pandemic and so on, is talking about, you know, if we look at what has emerged as, you know, essential workers, the most important work, and it turns out it's those things that are most closely like connected to caregiving, but are very often the stuff that's least paid, right? Most vulnerable. And people that are kind of like at most risk. You know, I think about, you know, healthcare workers, I think about delivery drivers. I think, you know, I know that in the KUA document that you sent to Hawkinson, you give a lot of attention to even food service workers, like people that are really kind of part of that caring infrastructure that it's often not kind of, you know, acknowledged, right? Both in terms of, like, you know, its material acknowledgement, but also in terms of how essential it is to our society. So. Very cool. And now, Paul, how about you?
Yeah. So I've always been left leaning. My radicalization has kind of, you know, took a lot of time to get kind of where I am now. But, you know, for a bit of a personal story, I guess, I got into a ski accident last February that ultimately ended up taking my leg. So I have no right leg, right? And that happened, you know, middle of February. And I was in the hospital for, I think it was like 89 days or something. So I not to mention that hospital was in New York City. So I was able to, you know, see the panic and, you know, watch our dear leader on the news not know what to say and stumble. And I was able to see the direct consequences of that. You know, I remember every day when Governor Cuomo. was on the news, the whole hospital would, like, stop and watch him. And now, he didn't do an amazing job, but, you know, he tried, right? And there was a little bit of dignity there. And I just remember, you know, people struggling with this and, you know, not knowing whether to come to work. The hospital slowly was a orthopedic specialty hospital, mm-hmm. and it slowly turned into a COVID
hospital, I was on the only floor that wasn't for COVID patients. And I remember my doctor pushing me to go home. And I wasn't ready to yet, of no fault of his, but, you know, we didn't know what was going to happen.
Right.
New York was, you know, it was completely going crazy. And, you know, I come home and I saw Hawkinson doing the same things, you know, grit and fortitude. We're going to get through this. I'm opening back up. I don't care about the students, you know, ignoring student demands. And there wasn't, you know, Healthy Campus Bill of Rights was around. And that was kind of the main venue of pushing Hawkinson. And he refused time and time again to not go to meetings. We still have that issue, right? He won't talk to us. And, you know, that's the first step. So I thought, you know, what can I do? And Healthy Campus Bill of Rights is great, but there's a lot of professors in there. And we can talk a little bit about this for people that don't know, but they're scared for their jobs right now because of Pashy Chancellor Dan Greenstein, you know, consolidating universities, laying off, or I guess it's retrenching for professors, like, you know, hundreds of them. And, you know, Kutztown might be next. And that's kind of, you know, that kind of hampered Healthy Campus Bill of Rights in a way, because, you know, they wouldn't want to go out and seem like they're causing too much of a ruckus.
Right.
Now, the work they did was amazing, and it was amazing just to have them to be able to, you know, give their guidance to us and to be able to have that organization, you know, that the professors union, APSCUF, there. But even APSCUF kind of turned their backs on us just because they're afraid, right? So I saw a need, and everybody in KUA saw a need for the students to stand up, the students to stand up and speak and do something about the situation that's going on, right? Kutztown is broken in many ways. So, you know, our letter seeks to address some of those.
Well, that's it. You know, I think that, you know, going back to that, you know, the Healthy Campus Bill of Rights, I think you're absolutely right about that. I mean, as you know, I mean, I've talked to you, you know, in some of the meetings, and we have our Healthy Campus Bill of Rights and so on. You know, I was one of the kind of like founding members of that. And one of the things that, I mean, obviously, once the pandemic hit and the things got shut down, that was the first wrench that got put into the, you know, into the organizing machine, trying to kind of, you know, refine our feet, refine the kind of way of kind of moving forward as we're kind of reorganizing our lives. But when all those retrenchment letters were coming down and stuff, I mean, people behave in really, I'll be generous, interesting ways, right, in situations like that. On the one hand, there's those folks who just, you know, they want to put their head down because they think that's the best way. If they don't ruffle anybody's feathers, they're going to be able to keep their job. I've never been like that, right? I've always been of the mind of like, the only way that you're safe is when you're out in the open and you're leading a public fight, right? That's where the safety is. And yet at the same time, you know, even for me, I had this, you know, I've got two little kids, right? And they were out of school then too as well. Then suddenly I'm kind of juggling, finishing off classes, trying to kind of manage my kids. And you know, my wife is a doctor, and she was, you know, she was working nonstop because of the pandemic. And so there it was. And so that took a huge toll out there. When I went personally, I'll say this, when I saw you all first launch your kind of occupation, right, of your protest, and then produce this letter, it was like, thank freaking God that there are people that are getting out in front of this and that are going to show the rest of the folks about how to lead. So that's just by way of saying thank you to all of you for really kind of like picking up that torch, right, and kind of like leading the way.
Thank you. You're welcome.
I wish it didn't have to be like that, though. That's the thing that's always is like bittersweet. Is like,
yep.
And it's always great to see like all the people we have in KUA that are doing a great job, and everyone works together really well. And they're like how you described this earlier. It's no hierarchy or anything like that. But it's just a shame that we feel the need to do this because of the negligence of an administration that we're paying their salary.
Absolutely. All right. So take me back to, or take our kind of listeners back in particular. I mean, for to Kutztown University activists, right? KUA activists, kind of where's the organization at right now? How would you describe kind of what you're doing? We can go into kind of particulars about the letter or whatever, like which is just absolutely freaking phenomenal. I've got some things that I'd love to hear your kind of takes on stuff. But where do you see the organization at this point? And give us that kind of the broad brush, if you will, about what you hope to do in kind of building this movement.
Yeah, I guess I'll go. So for right now, our main goal is to build our constituency, right? We like to say, because we're non-hierarchical, that, you know, we want to speak for every single student, you know, whether they agree with us or not, right? We want to hear everybody's input and craft something together and really build that base of student power. Right now, there's about 35 of us active, and we're just looking to build. So most of our actions coming up are just seeking to, you know, get our name out there, educate a little bit, you know, make the right people mad. But really right now, we're just focusing on kind of building.
I'm building the organization.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Any of you also want to jump in on that? How do you see the organization at this point?
Yeah, sure. I'm really happy with how this has turned out from starting with it. I mean, when Paul first brought the idea to me, I was like, wow, like this is either going to go really good or it's just going to, you know, it's going to be, you know, scary to set up just because with the atmosphere at Kutztown and stuff like that. But the amount of like friendships that have blossomed from this and like connections and, you know, the group chats we have with everyone, it's all so positive. And I've never met so many people at once that are just all so kind. You know, we haven't had any problems, you know?
It's pretty awesome. I mean, I think it's, yeah I mean, it's incredible. So let's talk a little bit about this letter that you sent to Hawkinson, right? I think I've said versions of this in different kind of forms before. But one of the things that's remarkable, and I'll make sure if any of you have got that link handy, if you want to drop it in the chat so other people can go here. Otherwise, I'll try to track it down. I should have thought about that ahead of time. But what
we'll
was
find
this?
It.
Awesome. What was it? What blew my mind about the about that document is, like, number one, how thorough it was. Number two, how much work that you put into, from my perspective at least, trying to represent a whole range of constituencies in there, right? In a really, I mean, I think in a way that kind of sets forth a vision. I mean, for the fact of the matter is, the first thing that, you know, the first, like, number one item, right on the front page of this document, you know, right on the front page is the mistreatment of Kutztown University's staff. Right. And, you know, calling for, you know, support unemployed food service workers, calling for paid sick days off, wage increases, hazard pay. I'm talking about protections of labor rights, talking about, you know, PPE, talking about testing. And it's like two pages that starts this from, like, looking at the conditions of workers on campus. Right. And then, you know, you kind of move to the lack of mental health services. And we've heard a lot about this. We had some activists on earlier on in the semester, or last fall, at least, talk a little bit about exactly this issue about the lack of mental health services for students, especially in times of crisis. Right? Talk about the horrible COVID-19 response team. Now, Kutztown University is leading, you know, some of the public universities, definitely, and most other universities in the number of COVID cases. We're over, what, 340 now, I believe. Talking about, you know, the unhealthy buildings, which has been one of my hobby horses for over a decade, because I happen to work in one of those ones that has black mold in the ceilings and that we've had to kind of, like, go public with national publications just to get the university to even respond to what we're doing. Talking about a commitment to racial diversity. Right. And there's longstanding issues of racism and kind of an exploitation and oppression of people of color at the university, both everywhere from, you know, from students right up through faculty and staff. Right. Commitment to LGBTQ and diversity. Right. Making that commitment and calling for true shared governance. I mean, I'm looking at this document and it's like a manifesto for where we need to go. I mean, let me ask you this. When did you have this document already when you did the sit-in in his office, in Hawkinson's office?
Yeah, that's where we presented it actually to him.
So take me through that process. What do you, like, how do you see this document as part of what you're doing in your organizing? And what are some of these kind of demands and why are they there?
Yeah, so somebody else should jump in whenever you're ready. But basically, these demands are, like you said, they're kind of our manifesto and they're what we're trying to change. And we tried to make them very specific and very actionable. Even going down to the minutiae of including numbers and stuff. And how we kind of got this document is by talking to people, right? We talked to professors. The Healthy Campus Bill of Rights did these meetings where we heard from, you know, parents, professors, students, and like staff members, right? So we heard a lot of these things and we're like, okay, well, what can we do to fix this? Mm-hmm. And the act of actually, you know, sitting down and writing it, me and Matt actually penned the whole thing with, you know, everybody else's support. And then, you know, because it took us like, you know, a really long time to sit down and write this 9-page document. And then we presented it at our next meeting. And, you know, there were a lot of changes. There still are some changes that need to be made to it. We're always taking the new feedback, right? But yeah, so we presented to everybody. Everybody at the meeting signed off on it. You know, there's a date that we like ratified it for fancy words and stuff, but then yeah, and then we went and we presented it to Hawkinson, and then we went down and we did a sit-in in the Dean of Students office where we also presented him and his office staff copies of our letter. And it was socially distanced, you know, we all wore masks, even rubber gloves and stuff. And you know, that was kind of our launching point from there. We existed before then, but this was kind of like our big, you know, coming out party almost.
Yeah, I'll add to that. And I think the main thing too, a lot of like what we even talked about in this demand letter is a lot of just experience. For example, like I experienced some of the things in the COVID-19 response. I laid out a lot of that stuff because I've heard things from other students. I've experienced some of my own things with the university regarding COVID. And in terms of unhealthy buildings, like you said, we've heard this is not a new problem, right? You know, and mental health services, I mean, there are countless examples and stories of people we have in KUA, our friends, and just people who have, you know, give us anonymous stories through what we do on the Instagram. And yeah, that's kind of a lot of where it came from. I think it's just a lot of just personal experience for all of us and things we've heard.
If you have to think about kind of like the agenda moving into the spring, right? So one of the things that, you know, I've heard KU activists talk a lot about, you know, I think it's kind of very active on your kind of Instagram and so on, is about really wanting to kind of continue the organizing and kind of change the kind of student culture, bring about this kind of new shared governance and a different vision for what could happen on the university. Can you talk us through that a little bit? Kind of how do you see that moving forward? Like what, like when you're sitting down and talking to other students and when you're kind of going, wanting to have those conversations about why it's essential, right, that you do this work, you do this organizing work, and why KU activists, you want them to join KU activists and be part of this. What's that pitch that you're making to folks?
I think something we try to encourage a lot is just that a lot of people are nervous, and for good reason. You know, there's anxiety in going out and trying to encourage people to do something or think a way they've never done before. But with that comes practice, and I can vouch from experience from being in the Bernie Sanders campaign, Students for Sanders, and campaigning on campus. That was something I'd never done before and was very nervous to do. But after doing that for a few times, it really trains you just to be that type of person to go out there, encourage people, you know, take, you know, those that just keep on walking and ignore you, just to take that all in stride. So something we would encourage is just trying and being supportive. You know, we're always supportive of people who cannot make it to demonstrations or too nervous to. We always try and make sure they have that support just so they know, like, this is not, you know, a peer pressure state. You know, this is something that's, you know, supposed to be volunteered for, and we encourage that. And from doing that, you know, you're only encouraging more people to join us and to see the type of activities you're doing, that this isn't, you know, some crazy organization, that we're really, you know, trying to get some, you know, better organizing here on campus. So it's a lot of just like encouragement and support, I think.
Yeah, I want to come back to you on this, Sam, in just 1 second. I just want to remind everybody who's joining in here that in a few more minutes, we'll kind of hear a little bit more about here. If you do have something, comments, that you can always throw something down in the chat. We're kind of monitoring that. If you want to call in, you got some comments, you got a questions for a student, you got something that you want to add to the conversation and widen out this conversation, you can hit that little call-in button down at the bottom of the page. We'd welcome your calls. If you're watching us right now on the YouTube live stream, you can always throw in a comment there too as well. Want to remind everybody, if you are listening on YouTube, make sure you hit that subscribe button, make sure that you ding that little bell so you'll know every time that we go live. And you can help support this show for as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Become a patron for as little as $5 a month. Right now, I forgot to mention this kind of really at the top of the show, but through the end of January, we've got a special for any new patrons that come in between now and the end of January. You get your choice of Michael Brooks's Against the Web book, Cosmopolitan Answer to the New Right, or On Tyranny, 20 Lessons from the 20th Century by Timothy Snyder. So just head on over to patreon.com/rcpress and hit the $5 a month to help support this show and support the work that we're doing at Raging Chicken. Or you can leave us some love right now by going down and hit that little kind of gift button at the bottom of your app, and send us a gift right now. On any kind of gift that you send us through that kind of Podbean app, will go to support this show. So Sam, I want to come back to you on this, where you're talking about the kind of mutual support and so on. I'm just curious, and it's similar to that same dynamic that, you know, like professors worried about losing their jobs, right? Because of course they are. About the kind of response, you know, if we look at like history right now, right? I mean, I think what has been thrown on our plates, we had beginning, I mean, again, obviously, it didn't begin with the murder of George Floyd, right? I mean, clearly Black Lives Matter had been raising this for years, and the kind of like systemic kind of racism in this country is not something that began in 2020, right? I mean, this is the legacy in very much of this country. So you have one, you have kind of the fight for racial justice. You've got the pandemic. You've got a political machine in the Republican Party that has been like doing everything they can to support Donald Trump and kind of all the brutalities that came through there. We had an attempted coup last week, right? And it seems that in many cases, crisis is the norm, not to mention time is ticking when it comes to climate change. So when you're talking about, and this is what I'm thinking, what you were saying, Sam, is you're talking about that supporting kind of each other in that. I'm curious, what does it seem to be like? I mean, obviously students might be nervous in this, and the people you're talking might be nervous in it, but is this a time where you see a tremendous amount of possibility in organizing, right? Are people just so scared that they're hiding under their desk, or are they fed up and do they want to kind of do something?
So what I'm thinking this all boils down to, as far as people just being nervous and, you know, the political climate we're in America, is that people don't really act until it starts affecting them. And I think that's all very clear. You know, no one really takes a crisis seriously until the one thing affects them. Very true with COVID. You know, no one's going to care about it until someone close to you dies or you yourself get sick. And then all of a sudden it's a very serious problem that suddenly opens your eyes. So I think it's just trying to beat people to that point before it does affect them in some way that's, you know, irreversible, and then they truly see it. So I think through talking with people, I think communicating is the most important thing, is something we really harp on in organizing, obviously trying to make those connections, is that it doesn't have to be till, you know, the problem starts affecting you. I think the time, you know, it's actually like a quote from MLK, but like, there's, you know, the time to always do the right thing is like always the right time, you know?
Right.
Like you don't have to wait. And I think that's just something you need to keep harping on. There's no time to wait. You know, no matter how much support you can give someone, you know, it really comes down to them just seeing like, you know, this may not affect me now, but it affects the people around them. And like I said earlier, life is just all about, you know, taking care of those around you and then yourself, because it, you know, really trying to take care of others, it comes back to you, you know, you find gratitude in that. So I think that's really just what society as a whole has to focus on, is that it's not just you you're taking care of. You have to start branching out.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm curious both either, say, Paul or Matthew too, as well, kind of your thoughts on that, because I'm, you know, and some people are looking at this moment as being a barrier for organizing. I mean, people should be afraid, right? And other folks are saying, no. There's never been a better time. As a matter of fact, people are ready to organize and are ready to kind of like really rethink kind of a lot of what has been common sense and the normal way of doing things, rethink these things in fairly radical ways.
Yeah. I'll add to that. Do you want to talk?
No, you got it. Okay, I'll talk after you.
Cool. Everything, I 100% agree with everything Sam says, and a lot of it hits home. I think what adds to that, or just, you know, the fear of organizing is, you know, am I doing the right thing? And also, like, there's a certain level of trust. Like, if I'm putting money into a public university that I'm attending, I want to think and I want to believe that I should be trusting the people who I'm giving my money, who I'm financially supporting, and I'm supporting. Of course, they're giving me an education, but also I'm helping them branch off and make more money. And the fact of the matter is especially with the response to not just COVID, but also other pleas for, you know, shared governance or racial diversity and equality in the workplace and for our students, people are just kind of, there's just not enough, there's no reason to trust the university that I'm financially supporting. You know, I think it's the same thing with politicians. It's like, we really feel as though that we should be able to trust these politicians. Yeah, they uphold standards and economic systems that have failed to bring people to economic freedom, true economic freedom, freedom in all sorts of different ways. So I think a lot of it comes to being complacent in, you know, your trust for the higher ups that you feel like you should be trusting, mm-hmm. and you kind of let anything bad they do slide, when at the same time, you know, they're kind of just using you for a profit, and it's always been that way. And that's why the time to act is now, because we really can't. We don't deserve to be treated like dollar signs.
100%. And Paul, you had some thoughts on this too.
Yeah. So like everything Matt and Sam said, plus a little bit more, really. You know, shared governance was kind of my big push, because I said, well, if we're going to do this, it can't stop when, you know, Kutztown stops committing worker abuse, right? Or these like these literal life and death things that are going on. You know, that shouldn't be the end. Students deserve dignity, as well as workers, as well as staff members, right? We have, you know, specifically in Kutztown, we have, you know, ineffectual leaders in Hawkinson and Dan Greenstein. And they time and time again just, you know, ignore, right? So the language from the shared governance, as well as incorporating paid positions for everybody that writes for the Keystone, that's our school's newspaper, as well as a public referendum process for any decision that I think we put in there affects more than like 20 people, right? So that takes the power then, and that would be done hopefully by like a direct vote, right? And that takes the power then, and it puts it directly in the students' hands to make these decisions for themselves that affect their education that they're paying for, right? And we see, you know, we can talk about this a little bit more later, but we, you know, the students at Kutztown, and especially in KUA, a lot of them, you know, me included, feel that Hawkinson and Greenstein can't be touched. Or it's Greenstein, sorry, Greenstein can't be trusted, right? They are, you know, by middle of nowhere PA standards, they're both wealthy, right? President Hawkinson makes more than Governor Wolf in a year, and I forget how much Greenstein makes, but you know, he was from California. He worked with Bill Gates. These people, they don't stand for, you know, what Kutztown's all about. Kutztown is a working class university through and through. You know, it started as a teacher's college, right? And, you know, what we've seen is kind of going away from that and offering the students less and less and less for, you know, more money, basically. Right. Yeah. So I think the, but, you know, the time to organize, you know, now isn't better. Now couldn't be any better because students are starting to see, right? They're starting to see because this the COVID issue is directly in students' face. You know, the mold issue in Lytle Hall, as an English major, I spend a ton of time there as well. You know, the people that work and study in that building, you know, it's right in their face. We have all these issues that are popping up and it's creating a hostile environment for, you know, everybody at Kutztown, but the bigwigs, right? And I think it's easier to get people motivated over that kind of stuff, you know, or the student that makes minimum wage on campus and, you know, needs to go to the food bank. Not that anything's wrong with going to the food bank, but that should not happen, you know? And the food bank is run by an outside provider anyway. It's not even run by Kutztown. So, you know, we have like the Walmart scenario of, you know, people working at Walmart on food stamps, essentially, right? And then that's not right. You know, Kutztown, the students, everybody that works at Kutztown, you know, they deserve a livable wage. And that's, you know, that's also another thing that's not happening.
100%. I mean, one of the reasons I chose to come to Kutztown from the get-go is like, I mean, number one is, you know, I lived in Washington, D.C. before I came here, and I was teaching as an adjunct faculty member at George Washington University and George Mason University. And I had an offer to stay in a, you know, permanent position at George Washington University, and I had an offer from Kutztown University. And what it came down to for me is like, you know, the students at this university remind me of the student of like the neighborhoods that I grew up in, remind me of my friends growing up. Right. And like it was always said, like, this is a working class university and this is, a you know, where I want to spend my time. And I had a mistaken belief, I should say, that the same commitment was shared kind of up and down the university system. And it, you know, that's clearly naive on my part, but it was also going through a kind of a real significant change at that point. I mean, when I got at Kutztown, you know, it was like we're seeing all this growth, but it was also the time where you start, you know, that lawmakers kept on cutting the budgets, and more of the cost of higher education was put on the back of students and their families. It was being defunded at the state level, and it seemed like, you know, you everything turned into this big PR campaign that was completely disconnected to the actual, you know, the lived experience of students and faculty and staff and the communities. I mean, I look at this interview that Chancellor Greenstein gave the other night to Spotlight PA in this kind of open Zoom call. I like to call him Chancellor McDreamy because that's what I think what he tries to kind of cultivate. But it seems like that some of that shine has kind of like come off his sparkle. And a couple things that stood out in that interview that has gotten a lot of play is like, one, he was asked right off the bat, right? Like, you know, if he's committed to combating racism on campus, right? He said, well, I haven't really studied the system. And he said, I'm a historian, so I'm ashamed to admit that I don't know about it. You know, and he said in a live interview, he said, that's a great point. I guess I should look into this, you know? And then later on in the interview, which this is the part I think kind of to what we're really pointing to talk about tonight that just blew my mind, right? When you're talking about the coronavirus impacts, right? And some of these questions may have even come from you guys. I'm not sure. But when it says, yeah, well, here you go. Yeah. In the fall, students at Kutztown University, along with their families, this is from Spotlight PA's write-up of it. Students at Kutztown University, along with their families, faculty, community members, protest the decision to reopen campus for the current school year. But Greenstein said that he was not aware of any campuses where students said they felt unsafe. He encouraged students living in private residences or in off-campus housing to discuss their level of comfort and safety with their family and friends. And then, quote, students that I spoke to who were on campus in campus housing, I think they felt very secure, he said. Quote, I think they may have felt the pinch of the restrictions on their abilities to do things more than others. That when I read that, I literally threw the newspaper down, right? Especially after the fact he says he has no idea this goes on. And I know for a fact because I helped moderate a forum with you guys where he was invited to come and speak to this because of the problems.
I was the one who sent the email to him. So, you know, I guess he didn't read it, even though he did respond. So, you know.
I mean, this kind of stuff just blows my mind. And Hawkinson with his grit and fortitude stuff, saying that there's been no complaints for students. I mean, for me, it feels like this, you know, systematic gaslighting of like the situation is what it feels like to me.
Yes, I know there are no people. Everyone is happy. That's what it feels like. It's almost like
we're doing a tremendous job. We're doing a tremendous job here. It's so wonderful. It's big. We've never seen so much grand happiness on our campuses before. Yeah, exactly.
That is so good.
That's what it felt like. Because we.
I love to see the level of grit and fortitude by our students and their families. Sorry to be interrupted. Yasmin Piper.
No, you're good. Yasmin Piper, we've been talking back and forth for a little while, you know, throughout, especially like the last semester, and she reached out and was like, and other people we know at Spotlight PA, they reached out and were like, if you have any questions, please like let us know. And we were all there, all three of us, and a few more people from KUA were there watching. And it felt like what he was saying was just like, dang, that sucks. I wish I could do something about it. Like, you are the overseer of everything. And for Pashi, you can do something. And during the entire topic of race, and he was just like, oh man, wouldn't it be great if racism didn't exist?
He kept chuckling.
Yes.
Yeah, no.
Yes, he didn't just say that.
Those words actually come out of his mouth.
Yeah,
he said,
"The end racism meme." You know, like we must end racism right away. You know, no, that's not how that works. You know,
just like,
and you know, he's an historian, but he can't name one thing that you know the Pashi system has done to historically disenfranchise and silence the voices of Black and Indigenous people of color.
Well, you know why? I mean, you know why he can't do anything about it is that he's misplaced his magic wand. It's clearly he can't he doesn't know where it went. He just lost it.
Yeah.
it was very disappointing because there's a lot that he can do. And you can hold people accountable. You can really feel like you can appear to be a leader and a voice for us, you know, who may feel like we don't have a voice in the entire public university process. But he doesn't. He's just, it's almost like he's a puppet for something else. Just like, you know, we feel like our current administration is just like that too. So that's why for some of us who have been directly affected by the decisions of these people who we're supposed to trust, it's just so mind-boggling that this was like the perfect example. And it proves why neither Greenstein or Hawkinson would want to talk to us because they know, they don't know what that, it feels like they don't know what they're doing. And I mean, that interview, Yasmin Piper, she did a great job of moderating that interview and asking tremendous questions that he just could not answer for the life of him. it was really disappointing that he you know, went on there and really did not impress us with anything he said. And that's not even trying to be critical. I wanted to go in there and have some hope. I just couldn't. I literally just could not.
It's crazy. I want to remind everybody who's joining us on the Podbean app right now, if you actually have anything, you got any comments you want to kind of jump on, you can hit that little call button at the bottom of your app, and I can pick up your call. We could hear your kind of comments, questions for the students. Same thing, if you have any comments I have listed, if you're following us on YouTube right now, make sure you hit that subscribe button and kind of smash that bell so you know every time we go live. You got a comment, you could throw it in there too as well. But I'm with y'all 100% on this one because, I mean, this has been my experience at Kutztown University, for a long, long time as being, you know, active in our union for, you know, since basically I came to Kutztown, and now, you know, frankly, you know, I have no problem saying this now. I've been kind of pretty frustrated even with my union, on kind of thinking that somehow we could all just get along. When clearly, you know, in some ways it's a microcosm of what we see happening on our kind of national politics. It's like you've got these Democrats, you know, especially kind of like, you know, Democrats who are, you know, kind of mainstream, kind of the leadership Democrats that are there right now are just going to say, okay, now maybe the Republicans are going to come to their senses, right? And I'm just looking as like, are you freaking kidding me? these people are calling in white supremacists to kill you, right? And you're thinking like, oh, the fever's going to break. No, it's not, you know? Yeah. And, you know, I don't know where that sensibility comes from, right? That whole idea that, well, maybe if we're just nice to the people in power, that somehow they're going to give us some crumbs that we can be happy about. I mean, for me, that just seems like so disgusting. And I'm raising two little kids, and I would never, ever want my kids to think that the best that they could do is to beg for crumbs for the people in power. That's disgusting to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I see people like Greenstein think that he could show up at this thing and just call it in, right? Just kind of like, oh, I'm just going to go there, put on a little glitter. I'm going to sparkle my teeth, right?
And he clearly was not prepared, you know, in any way. We could tell when he, you know, first they asked COVID things, and we did submit questions to Yasmin Piper. And just unfortunately, his fumbling of the questions about race kind of took a lot of time, rightfully so. And, you know, our questions weren't able to get asked, but at least she was able to ask about COVID. And I wish she had gotten to our questions, because we called out, you know, we had quotes from him and Hawkinson and dates and, you know, numbers and stuff, right? And I can't imagine, you know, how hard he would fall to actually being held accountable, you know?
It's astounding. I mean, this is what you realize. I mean, this is why I'm so glad that you guys pushed him hard on this, that she pushed him hard on all this stuff. Because once you get to see the chinks and the cracks in their armor and realize it's just a freaking big facade and a show, right? That's the opportunity to kind of show other people that too as well. It's like, these people are just, I'm sorry, this, I'm a little upset now. I'm like,
yeah,
I'm
look okay. at that.
And
I feel
they're
you.
Freaking jokes. I mean, you know, right from the beginning with Hawkinson at the beginning of the school year, going out and putting out that video, which basically says, you know, some of you may die. It's like freaking Shrek man himself is out there, you know, it's like, and you know, the guy, he's out there basically yelling into the camera about how everyone has to have grit and fortitude. And I'm thinking like, because there's working class students, I think, you know what, you're talking to the student, you're talking to the kids and grandkids of, like, you know, like miners, and just like he said, right, coal miners and steel workers, and you know what, they had bosses that were forcing them into the mine and saying, you know, you got to do this, have grit and fortitude, and they got black lung and died.
Right? Yeah, no, exactly. And what we have is, you know, Jesus. Them Hawkinson is co-opting this language of the working class, and he is not a member of the working class.
No,
you know, as far as not, you know, he doesn't own Kutztown University, but he is not, he does not stand for the students of Kutztown University. I, kind of like you, Kevin, I chose to go to Kutztown and, you know, not a school like Lehigh or Penn State, because I wanted to go to a public school. You know, I support public education. I want to be a public school teacher, you know, and I wanted to get my education from a public institution. And the, you know, like you, I thought they, you know, had our backs, and they just don't. You know, it's empty platitudes, and there's no vision, you know, at all. At the Greenstein interview, I put you can make like comments or whatever.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that it was going to go to everybody. I was trying to message him and Yasmin Piper, and I said, you know, shouldn't Dan Greenstein be the one with the vision? You know, he's fumbling these questions. He's not providing any actual direct answers to anything, you know, just, oh, that's really important. Or not even that, you know, just completely disregarding some questions and saying, I haven't experienced this, when people are emailing him. I have emailed him. I can, you know, I can show people the email and his response. Right. I even think we might've posted it, or we might've posted some with Greenstein. I know we posted some with Hawkinson, right?
Yeah,
and there's just absolutely no vision and you know, thought at all. Like, you know, Kutztown just put in a new soccer field, which is great and all, but there's black mold in the buildings, right? And Legionnaires, which is a water-based disease in our water. And there is just, you know, it's a complete lack of, you know, what people actually want. You know, like, a soccer field is nice, but I'd like to not get sick, please. You know? And...
Well, and I think
it's
about that too,
really
about forcing. I've had a lot of students who are athletes, right? And who basically came back to campus in the fall, you know, because that's where the training is, right? I mean, mm-hmm. and we're a lot of the students who ended up kind of getting locked in, you know, basically locked into their housing agreements and things like this because they were hoping that the season would start and so on. And we've seen reports now come out about the impact of COVID on like college athletes precisely because of their exposure. And you're talking mm-hmm. about, and this is not, I mean, obviously you don't have to be an athlete to have these long-term effects, but you're talking about like scarring on your lungs. It's just causing problems and heart issues and so on. And so it seems to be an especially kind of like rich irony that you're going to put in the soccer field, but not take care of the people who are going to mm-hmm. be playing on that soccer field. I mean, yeah. that just blows my mind. It just blows my mind. So I don't know. I'm going to remind everybody once again, if you have any comments, questions, you want to call in, you got something to say, you got questions you got to ask, we'd love to hear your voices, hear what you think, hear what's on your mind or other things that we haven't got a chance to touch on yet. But kind of as we're kind of starting to getting ready to close out kind of soon, but unless we get some callers who kind of want to come in here. Give us some sense, maybe we can kind of go through each of you on this one, a sense of your perspective of like, well, first of all, you know, I like to think about like the end of the show is going to be an opportunity to talk about possibilities and plugs, right? So what do you see about the possibilities of the organization going forward, the possibilities for organizing, student organizing, whether at Kutztown or more broadly right now, and some plugs for some things that you got coming up? Like what do you got in the works? What kind of plans you got? Is there any things that you want to plug that's going on here? Hey, we got a call coming in right now. So before we get to that, hold on to that. We got Brian calling in. Let's see what we got here. Hey, Brian, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes, I can hear you.
Awesome. So hey, I'm sorry that I upset you by destroying college football, but but I'm glad that you decided to call in and so that we can hash this out in real time. Just kidding. No, Brian.
That's
so
right, Mahoney. I'm coming at you.
There you go.
No, so I just wanted to let everybody know you guys are doing great work, and I think it's great. But the other thing I wanted to let you know is it's just not your campus, right? I don't know if you've listened to any of the other shows. Like I've been on and talked about how this is happening at the University of Cincinnati. So the same thing is happening. New facilities, but we don't care about the students, right? Yeah, it's like fundraising for a head coach's football head coach's salary, but no fundraising for scholarships. So these are the types of things that I think it's great you're doing it. I also just want to show, like, I just want to talk about the idea or just throw it out there that it's not just you and it's systemic, right? I'm not trying to say like, oh, you guys should stop wanting. I'm literally saying like, there's a really fertile ground for this type of organizing. At Cincinnati, there's a website called Boldly Bankrupt, and it's run by students and they've been putting this together for some time now. And they're going over the exact same things. And that's the question I'd like to pose to you guys, actually, is, you know, as this seems to be much like COVID, a pandemic, or at least, you know, an epidemic in the United States, doesn't it just seem, from your point of view, that the people who are in charge are held to incredibly low standards?
Yes.
I mean, one important answer, absolutely, yes.
Yeah, I mean, because that's what I'm constantly coming back to, because like what you're talking about with the chancellor and president, like I wasn't allowed to get away with that as a student at any level. And I'm sure none of you would be, especially those of you who are, majoring in music, are allowed to do any sort of individual slacking performances of that nature either. And yet we've got people who are getting paid hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars, who are sort of like, yeah, I'll check that out, or I don't know about that, or I've never thought about that, you know. And so it's
insulting. Absolutely
right. Absolutely. And that's why I'm all excited about it, not letting you talk. So that's my bad, but I just wanted to
no, you're good.
I'm right with you. There are a lot of folks who are with you. You guys are on to something. Keep it going. If you want to do any sort of organizing cross campuses, let me know. I'll see what I can do as well. I'm at the University of Cincinnati. And again, just keep up the good fight. You guys are doing good work.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Brian.
Yeah, thank you.
Awesome. Thanks for the call in, man. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Yeah. And I'm going to be bugging you soon to come back on the podcast soon too. So, I'll give you all, his contact info too, as well, if you want to get in touch with them. He was on the show, last time. It always seems like last week, and then it turns out it's like 3 months ago. but it was he was talking about in part some of this project that these students did. This called Boldy Bankrupt, and it was pretty cool. So it's some cool stuff going on there too as well. You also have been kind of connected up, or at least working with some of the folks from USAS too. Is that right?
Yeah. So KUA is now officially a USAS local, and so you can call us KUA USAS Local Number 69. We have that in our bio now, which is really awesome. We did have some debate before going into it as far as joining an organization that is not just, you know, us. We're so proud to have it just like grassroots type. But now that we have USAS, I know Madeline has been a part of that and would always be talking to us too and giving us info on that. But we're going to have so much more resources and, you know, connections from this. We had a long phone call with one of the organizers from USAS, me and Paul, which is really informational. And I'm really looking forward to the opportunities that are going to come out of that and all the new people we're going to meet. So from that, I mean, our last KUA meeting, we had a calendar session. We came up with a lot of good ideas. We're going to start calling them down. Not going to say anything specific just so we don't get outed on anything, but we do have like a lot of things planned. So I think it's going to be a good semester, you know, what we're working on.
I'm liking that.
Yeah.
I'm liking, like, all right, we're going to keep our cards a little close to our chest right now, because the element of surprise is always one of the things that we've got in our toolbox.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I will say, check out our Instagram either tonight or tomorrow for the next thing that we're doing that everybody on this call can also participate in. So it's in the chat. It's at KU Activist. And you'll see, you know, a bunch of resources there. And like I said, starting tomorrow, there will be an action that people can participate in.
Awesome. Well, and I'm gonna make this I'm gonna say this publicly too as well. So all my all the listeners, everyone who's been following, all our supporters of Raging Chicken can hold me to this, right? And they'll know I'll do this. Is when we started Raging Chicken Press, it was way back in 2011, right? It was right after there was a Tea Party victories in 2010. There was a whole bunch of, you know, attempts to kind of really slash kind of public, you know, public education, public health care. It was the rise of the kind of, the, you know, the first version of this kind of radical right kind of insurrection over there. And so we started Raging Chicken as a way of kind of responding to that, right, in a written format. A lot of one of my co-editors, Sean Kitchen, who I do the Friday podcast with, he used to write kind of quite a bit. We broke all sorts of national stories on this stuff, but as it's gone on, we've moved more over into the podcast venue for a bunch of different reasons. It has a lot to do with, you know, kids on my side and him getting another job on the other side. But I'm saying all that by way of saying is that the entire infrastructure of kind of Raging Chicken Press as an alternative publication is still there. And I am always open for people of ideas who would like to make that project their own, right? And kind of, or at least put their mark on it, right? So if you have folks from KU Activists, there's other people out there that would kind of say, hey, we've got some ideas about how we could actually use a media space. You know, it's already paid for. I'm willing to kind of help edit and help make it happen for anybody who wants to go on. So put that in your kind of like kind of discussions, I guess, if you will, because I'd love to see that kind of reblossom in the kind of the written in other media formats. So we're there. So other things that you want to leave folks with this evening, kind of looking forward toward the organizing ahead, or things that you want to kind of put any calls out to kind of students at Kutztown University or to the community, things that you'd like to leave our audience with tonight. Why don't we start with Paul?
Okay, cool.
Matt, go ahead, Matt. Yeah, it's fine.
Oh, okay. I think if I was to say one thing, though, if there are any students listening, is I know it sounds scary, to a certain extent, it is kind of scary to like try and basically go up against the administration that, you know, of the school that you are attending. But we have been successful. Obviously, we've only been a thing for about we've only been an actual organization for about a semester now, going on our second semester. But Kutztown's concessions I would call them concessions, in their new spring reopening plan, and they're beefing up their testing, you know, just proves to show that we are, our voices are being heard to, but not necessarily the way we want, because obviously we want to talk to them, but there are changes being made. And a lot of that is, we argue, because of the pressure that we're building up, because we are forcing it down the administration's throat that, hey, there was a problem and we need change. We need actual help, or else, you know, there's going to be a lot more hell to pay, honestly. Not anything like crazy threatening, but, you know, obviously we would not stand for you having a job with this university if you're not willing to protect us.
Absolutely. Paul, you want to jump in?
So, you know, to any students or, you know, anybody that deals with this kind of, you know, disrespect and silencing, you know, you don't need to, that's not something you need to live with, right? There are organizations. I'd encourage everybody to, you know, I'm a member of the Industrial Workers of the World. You know, there are organizations out there that can help you, and they will help you. And if you're a student from Kutztown and, you know, anywhere, start talking to people, you know, find out what they, you know, what their issues are. Just get out there and, you know, try and organize a little bit, you know, make positive change for yourself and for everybody else. And specifically to, you know, students, you don't need a organization that is directly affiliated with the university to make positive change. KUA is decidedly not an official university organization, and that's just so we don't face any disciplinary actions, or it's way harder to face any disciplinary actions because there is nothing to tie people back to it if they don't want, right? And a lot of times we see in organizations, you know, that are directly affiliated with, you know, I'm going to say it, but like systems of oppression, right? Mm-hmm. They, you know, they derive their power from that same system, right? So if your club is an activist organization and it's also directly affiliated with the university, that there are ways of silencing you, and that doesn't have to happen, right? And there are even people in clubs that don't want that change because they get their power from the same system, right? That's hurting other people. So get out there and start talking to people, and, you know, build up a real movement, and try to, you know, reclaim your dignity a little bit, because these people, the wealthy, the elites, that they feel like they don't have to give any of us dignity, like, at all, right? We saw that, you know, and I'm sure to the caller, like, yeah, this happens at every school. I'm sure of it, you know, because there is a hierarchy at all of these schools. And, you know, that generally means the people at the top they won't care about the general population. They just won't, because they don't have to. Like, we see that even in the Democratic establishment now in Washington. They don't have to care about us, so they won't, unless we make them.
100%. And Sam, let's go to you to close this out.
Yeah, I'll keep it short and sweet. Depending on what you believe, you're only going to live once, and the power is within the people. So don't get caught up, you know, too much in social media politics. You know, Facebook arguments in the comment section is only going to go too far. You know, I mean, so far, if not anywhere, it's really going nowhere. Just don't feel the need to argue on Facebook, but get out there and organize, you know, find the meaning in connecting with people and having those verbal, you know, connections. That's where change is all going to happen. So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, listen, I thank you all three of you for kind of coming on tonight. I appreciate it so much. And I know you probably got tons of stuff to do ahead of classes tomorrow. But to join us on this Martin Luther King Day, 2 days before the inauguration, less than a week after the coup, and as we begin classes for the spring semester, here we go. It's a crazy time. So thank you all for joining me tonight.
Thank you
for having us on.
All right. And I'd like to thank our audience out there too as well. Thank you so much for your comments. Thank you for your kind of constant support. And we remind you that you can help support this show. You can help all that we do at Raging Chicken by going to patreon.com/rcpress and become a patron for as little as $5 a month. You can give us a one-time donation by heading on over to paypal.me/rcpress, or right now, and the last final seconds of sitting here on our show, you can down to the bottom of your phone and kind of hit that little gift app. Any gift that you send us will kind of help support this show too as well. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We're going to be played out once again by the awesome Jonathan Mann. Thank you all for joining us tonight, and remind you that we will be back on Friday for our flagship show, Out the Coop with Sean Kitchen, failed coup survivor himself. See ya! My face, my arms, see y'all. Can't tell if I exist. Am I the sky, the rock, or tree falling in the forest? I had a friend once, at least I think I did. I almost can't remember exactly what a friend is. There are no people in the future. Try my people to call.